Welcome to The Systemic Way. In today's episode, we meet with Dr. Viola Salai and Dr. Tamás Martos. They're a psychologist couple, both family therapists, university researchers, and the developers of the EMOF therapeutic procedure, which is what we are talking about in our episode today. EMOF is the emotional map of the family home, and it's a therapeutic tool for self-discovery, family exploration, and storytelling. It is a tool to support the everyday work of helping professionals. It can be used to visualize and discuss the emotional experiences of individuals and families in the home. If you want to find out more, you can go onto their website, which is emof.experimaps.com. We will put the link in the bio of this podcast. And Julie and I had the absolute pleasure to meet with both of them to hear about the development of the tool, their thinking and the way they use EMOF. And some of their stories about their work in Hungary. Julie, what are some of your reflections from the episode?
Thanks, Cesar. It's hard to know in some ways like what exactly to say about our conversation, because of course it's a very rich conversation and there's lots of things that I could draw upon. But I think what I found inspiring about it was how drawing a map of the home or using their tool can bring out really stories, untold stories, new stories about togetherness and belonging, withdrawal, a retreat in the home. And it sort of gives you a way of how the home holds emotions and different spaces in homes hold emotions, which just allows for completely different ways into conversations. And it was a real joy to hear about that. I don't know if there's something you wanted to add, Cesar.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite things about doing this podcast really is when we leave an episode and I'm immediately kind of like infused to try something, you know, like I listened to the episode, I met some really interesting people. Monday when I go to work, I'm thinking maybe I could try that. And that's what I really got from this episode with Viola and Tamás. I was like, great, this is a tool, a tangible tool that I'm really excited about using. I really want to get my hands on the actual toolkit, which is like the board game of this, you know, which is really, I can imagine some of the young people that I work with and the families really, really taking to it and really kind of make good use of it. But I mean, beyond that, without the actual toolkit, it was just the concept and the drawing of the home and some of the questions and that we spoke about was something I felt like just from speaking with them and understanding how they use it is something that I thought immediately enriched my work. So that's something that I really took away from, was really grateful for, and the opportunity to go and read about their work and find out more. So I think listeners, people who listen to the podcast, I think that's something that they might really appreciate as well about this episode. And it's a really kind of generous insight into their workings of this tool. So I think people will really enjoy this one. Welcome, Tamás and Viola, to The Systemic Way. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's a great excitement, honor to us to be here. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure to be here together with Tamás, as we are working together in therapy and research, and then being here together.
Thank you. It's really nice to have you both, Tamás and Viola. And I know that we're here to talk about your tool, EMOT, which is the emotional map of the home. And I'm aware that we're speaking to you, you're in Hungary. And I was wondering what the word for home is in Hungarian.
Okay.
As a starting point.
Yeah, it's otthon.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we gave some time for our presentations in several countries to collect the words from different languages for this word home, and and sometimes it's not easy to find the right expression. Like in French, I can't speak French, but Viola can, and it's not so easy to find the exact word for this home, at homeness, and so on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, we are working with people from different nations and countries. We always ask them to think about home in their native language, yes, because in every language is something special, something emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I know I was thinking I'm half Norwegian, so is hjem is how we would say it. And Seza, how would you say it in Turkish?
We say ev.
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 Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. It's funny because in my mobile phone from my mum, the house phone is still called Ev.
Yeah, I can understand. Yeah.
And I think it's very typical that we have our homes from our previous life in our phones, in our memories, and so on. So we take our home experiences with us in several ways.
Yeah, our home is somehow our identity also. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to get more into that, hopefully, as we continue our conversation. But I thought it'd be nice anyway to sort of introduce a few different languages and ways of saying the word home, because obviously we're speaking in English, but home is in many different languages, like you just said. But as a starting point, before we get into all of that, it would be really wonderful to know how you both know each other and to hear a little bit more about your background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we are psychologists and family therapists, and we've been working together for more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we are husband and wife, so we are a couple. And we are working together also in family science, in research, and in our private practice as co-therapists. And I think those layers of our collaboration are somehow contributing to each other throughout our professional lives. So I think it is also something very special. And when we are thinking about home and family dynamics in terms of research and therapy, that's something that gives a deeper understanding of each setting.
Yeah. In terms of places, we live in Budapest. This is the capital of Hungary. Our main professional work is at the University of Szeged. It's south of Hungary, from Budapest, about 170 kilometers. So we commute every week to and back. And we teach there, give psychology lessons to students. But also we include systemic thinking into the teaching or teaching activities. And we have this private practice here in Budapest. So, and sometimes we work in an online setting, and it is given, so it's provided from this place where we are now. Yeah.
And we also travel a lot because on the board of the European Family Therapy Association, and we are regularly invited to give workshops in European institutions, universities, and family therapy institutes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And one more detail from myself. I had a degree in architecture, so. It's an interesting story. Probably we can later on go into the details how we came to researching and working with home experiences. But somewhere at the start, there was my first degree in architecture, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I could see the benefits of having the architectural skills in drawing the home, you know, and in using the tool, and then in the creation of the tool that you've created, which we'll talk about. Thank you for that introduction. We're really interested to know what the kind of seeds were for you to really begin to focus on this particular kind of way of working or this particular area of interest in really focusing on the home environment. Is there any kind of stories around where this began for you both?
Well, it somehow came from my side. So, and when I am just tracking back this history of my interest in homes, I think that for me, it was important that as a child, thanks to my parents who had international relations, friendships, and so on, I had the chance to spend some time in European families, in other countries and cities, just without my parents. So like being, as a child of another family in France or Germany and so on. And as a child, I had to understand the family around me. And I think the way I observed their routines in the home space and the way they were using the home space gave me a hint about how the family was working and what my role would be in the family and so on. So from that point in time, I just developed this special interest of observing other people's, other families' homes as a tool for understanding what's going on and what the roles are and what how the relationships would unfold in that family. So 20 years later, when I was a psychology student, in it was somewhere in the first 2 years that I had to choose a topic for a student's research piece, and I was under hard time pressure. So I had some 10 or 15 minutes to figure out what my research topic would be and to present it to my professor. And I just sat down for a coffee, and that was a very inspirational moment. It was an underground cafe in the university building that was dark, and I was quite alone there. But then somehow I had a vision, and I linked lessons learned from two previous courses at the university, and one was an introduction to family therapy with some exercises, structural exercises like the family floor plan, and the other one was environmental psychology. And my vision was about applying environmental psychological insights in an approach to the family floor plan technique. And at that point, I had this idea of having something really visual, like a real floor plan incorporated in a qualitative interview, so like a research technique. So this was the main idea, to combine a family therapy technique with a research technique and the environmental psychological approach. So I presented my idea to my professor, and I'm really grateful to her that she accepted. And now I can see that it proved to be a pretty good idea, because I've been working on that since that point. So for like it's 20 years.
A very inspirational cup of coffee. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Oh wow.
And Tomasz, how about you? What's your connection with the seeds?
At that time, I don't know. I tried to forget everything I learned in architectural courses, so to say, at that time when Viola sat down with the coffee. When I studied architecture and I graduated in it, and I tried to find forms and spaces and so on, and try to somehow it's a bit exaggeration, but as architects, what are we trained to forget about people? Try to focus on abstract functions, abstract needs, and try to build something nice around it. So that was my idea about architecture, at least. Mm-hmm. And as I grew as a person during my studies and after graduation, and I certainly felt in a moment that I don't want to deal with buildings anymore. No spaces, no materials. I would like to know people, and I would like to work with people and how they behave and how they feel and so on. So this was a turning point where I started my psychology courses and graduated after 5-7 years. 7 years as a psychologist, and I completely tried to forget everything about architecture. But as the saying says, the more something changes, the most the same will be at the end, or something like that. I don't know if you know this thought. And when we met with Viola, I was surprised that someone uses floor plans and home drawings. I was so familiar with my in my previous professional life, and she could do it in a psychological way, absolutely in a psychological way. And I thought that's fantastic. First, it was research, and as she presented me her idea, it was about research and how she could use in qualitative interviews and so on. And then, as we could see that it worked as a research tool, then after a while, I don't know if I suggested it first, but after a while, it was a common understanding that this could be implemented in family therapy and systemic therapy as well. And since we at that time worked together as co-therapists, we explored theoretically this possibility and reflected on it, and then we were waiting for the best moment to start, and when it came, we jumped in.
Yeah, well, I think it was there when our dreams met, because this was also my dream when I presented my doctoral thesis. So it was I think during my doctoral research that we met. So I first presented in the beginning of the doctoral training my dream thesis. It was about the development of emotional map of the home interview, and also how it would end up being a tool for family therapy. So at the time it was just a dream. Mm-hmm. but then I met Tomáš, and he could join this concept, and also the approach, the perspective, and then we did it together.
Yeah, I got involved in the research part, so we did the analysis together, the whole interview analysis, grand theory analysis, and so on. And I just could see that how rich the data is, how rich the sharings of the respondents are when they talked about their homes. And this was very fascinating and inspirational to go forward and step forward and implement this into therapy.
Yeah, and I felt very much appreciated by him when he was He also did his doctoral research, but it was with 4,000 respondents and not 23 like in my PhD research. So seeing him finding something valuable in my research with those 23 respondents, it was something great. So that was a deep understanding of the whole concept. And so from that point, we have been working on it together.
Thank you. I'm thinking the emotional map of the home is a love story, is what I'm hearing, part of what I'm hearing from here. Not only between you, but also just as a tool and as a project in every way. I can, so you know that in, we have the saying, you know, home is where the heart is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking of when I hear you talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I suppose I was wondering, I mean, I loved it, Viola, when you were talking about when you were a child and how being in homes helped you to sort of understand families and roles and relationships and seeing relationships unfolding. And I was just wondering, maybe if you could just, if there is something to add about, you know, why sort of exploring home is important.
Well, yes, it's because, of course, as a child, I was not thinking in terms of, you know, in environmental psychology, but now I can say that home is a so-called social-physical environment. That means that, you know, important environments, physical environments we are using in our everyday life would gain a specific emotional meaning over time. And also our most important relationships are unfolding in that specific environment with those specific boundaries and possibilities. So we are also shaping the home, and there is a two-way adaptation. So we are adapting our relationships and also our personal self-regulation strategies to the home environment. Like if we have, you know, our own to withdraw to, then we would do that. In other homes where you cannot withdraw anywhere because there is, let's say, only one room for five people, then adaptation would unfold in another way. So we have to adapt, but we are also shaping the home, because home is the environment where we are most in control of the physical objects and the way maybe also walls are set or the way pieces of furniture are arranged. So we are shaping this environment, and it also has an impact on us. So whenever we like enter our homes, it's a reflection of our identity also, because we decorate it, and maybe we can have, you know, photos and so on a wall, but not just that, because we have maybe a sofa and some armchairs to sit in a circle in some homes, or in other homes you would not have that, because people like feel safer if they are not in the same space. So there you would have, you know, chairs put next to computers and screens and so on, and nothing to sit in a circle. So this is how we shape the home, and then our relationship processes and relationship regulation processes would adapt to that specific shape of the home.
Yeah, as I see individuals, from the beginning, as I started to think about individual functioning and personality and so on, a very important notion was for me that we are all embedded in broader systems, and that's how individual and systemic views meet each other. In my professional view of humans, and this embeddedness is very important in every way. Of course it's connected to what Viola mentioned, a very important part of this embeddedness is how we can create a good space around us, a good environment, good relationships, of course, and good physical space as well. And we found a very interesting ecological theory about niche construction, every species, every organism, and every individual being, not just human beings, but every being tries to create a safe niche around itself. And this niche, as we create it, also have an impact on us. And as I try to work on this concept, I met this home concept, and I found that yes, home is the best example of this niche construction process. Home is the center of our trying, of how we try to create a safe space around us, whether it is successful or not. Sometimes it's not always successful, of course. There could be failures, there could be disappointments about it, and so on. And of course, the socio-physical space can block our own desire and or own striving for good spaces and so on. This could be very traumatizing and so on. But as a core striving in us, there is this need for good spaces, good places, good niche, and home is like a very typical how we do. Home is not just the place. The home is how we do it, and how we experience these strivings and these needs. And I think this is how we can connect to the method that we need to understand these processes, and we need to understand the several ways people try to create and serve these spaces, and the experiences they are getting when doing this.
Yeah, thank you. I'm hearing you talk about the kind of the different layers of meaning within a home. I think you said it before, Viola, about this kind of representation of yourself and a representation of the family, maybe the family values and culture comes into that, and how home plays an important part in bringing that out into the world. But, you know, in within your home and manifesting a big part of your kind of your identity. But also the role of the home, of providing psychological comfort.
Yes.
And meeting an individual, but also the family's needs. Yes. I don't know if you've seen the Disney film. I think it's Disney anyway. Encanto. Have you seen this at all? No. I recommend it. But I won't go into it too much, but it's about a family, and the home is like a magical home, where the home at different points will assist different people to do certain things. So there might be someone who has like mobility issues, so the floor moves them along through the house, you know? So it made me think about how the home can assist with meeting people's needs. But then also on the flip side of that, you know, the kind of the negative affect that can, one, be created in a home, but also the physical structures of a home then not being at times, you know, suitable to meet people's needs, you know, like overcrowded or very small housing or cramped situations or houses with mold. And, you know, there's lots of problems that can occur from the physical structures of a home. And I'm wondering, I mean, since I've kind of started looking into EMOF, it's made me think a lot more about the actual home. I don't know why it's not been really much of a concept in my own thinking around home as a service for people. So these are some of my thoughts. And I really want us to talk a little bit actually about the tool itself as a research tool, as an intervention tool, and we can try to get into some of the applications of it. But maybe it'd be useful for us, for you to just tell us what it actually is, what the tool is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I started to develop the tool during my university years, it was based on the drawing of the floor plan. So just like in that family therapy exercise. So I asked my interview respondents to draw a layout of their home, and also to draw the most important pieces of furniture. So it had to be a kind of detailed layout of the home, with all the beds, tables, chairs, armchairs, also the balcony or the garden, the doors, sometimes the carpets, and maybe also important pieces of decoration like pictures or photos and so on. And then I would ask them to identify the place of specific emotional experiences, like the place of security for them in their home, the place of insecurity, the place of well-being, the place of tension or suffering, the place of togetherness, the place of withdrawal, and also in some cases the symbol of the home. So they would place numbers on the layout, like first being security, two insecurity, and so on. And then comes the most important part, where we would generate stories. So I asked them about the stories of that specific places. So not the stories about emotions or emotional experiences, because that's hard to tell. But instead, I asked them about the places. So, for example, if someone, let's say, put the place of security at a specific corner of the kitchen table, then I would ask, okay, what's the story of this kitchen table? What's the story of you experiencing security there? What's happening there? What's going on there? How do you get there? And where are the others while you are experiencing security there? So these are everyday stories that would involve all family members living in the same home, but centered around the place. And this is how we could see the stories being a gateway to everyday family dynamics and choreographies that they experience on a daily basis, with patterns of closeness and distance, and so on. So it was the drawing tool.
Can I jump in quickly? Just because that distinction you made is quite interesting. So not really when you're asking those questions and the stories, you were saying it's not so much about the emotion, but more about the story around it. Yes. Could you help me understand that a little bit more, and the difference between the two, and how you might do that?
Mm-hmm. I think this is because we took seriously that the home and home parts of home is a gateway where we can step in into the experience. And this is why we use always this, the place as a door, and try to use it also verbally in these stories. Probably it's also because we experienced with clients and also with respondents in research that talking about specific emotional states is sometimes hard. Some emotions are hard to name sometimes for people who are in disadvantaged situations, who probably are ashamed because of their situations, and can hardly share their inner feelings. But talking about places and talking about place related stories, it's a bit more common thing, and a bit more easy to talk about stories and what's happening there, and so on. So that was the main idea behind, and we always say in the trainings and so on that don't ask, for example, you can ask anything, of course, if you use this method, but first we suggest asking about the place of security and not about where do you feel secure or safe. And we found that this small distinction is important, as we can step closer to the emotions, because if we talk about this, the place, then we are together with the other. Like if I would talk with Viola about her place experiences, then she would look at this, the layout, the map, and talk about the place, and I would look at the map and talk about the place, and this way we are together in looking at the place, and not talking about, so to say, directly about her emotions. And of course Viola is here the example of a client who could feel that we are talking about something that is outside of us, so to say, and okay, it's our experience that it's more, it's easier to talking about this third thing somewhere there, which is important, of course, and can bring in many deep experiences, but not you and me, between you and me, so to say.
Yeah, and also we always start from the place itself, and by recalling the place, because we are interested in embedded and embodied experiences. So embedded in the environment, and embodied because when we are recalling those home experience and behaviors and so on, those are also embodied experience, like being there in their body and moving around and meeting others or not meeting others. So this is a deeper level of recalling specific stories and we can see how they also have their own insights while recalling their own stories in this way.
Thank you. I was thinking, I think it's in your presentation, I think there's a phrase that's used that as that it opens doors to stories from this starting point. And I was thinking about how it, often in families you think you know each other sort of inside out and everything about each other, but this tool in a way invites us to learn new things about each other. But also at the same time, you're also listening to each other in new ways, and the importance of that, and as a practice, really, it seems to offer. I don't know if there's anything else that you wanted to add.
Yeah, we always think that there are so many stories, untold stories, in even in families, of course, and even in functional families. But in these functional families, there are many untold experiences, untold stories. And we use this method in family therapy, in systemic therapy. If there are many family members, they do their emotional map separately. So mm-hmm. we give the instructions to them, and they draw to themselves and locate the experiences for themselves first. And then they show each other, and then they share their emotions and their experiences. And yeah, we always see that there are big surprises. Yeah. So if they share their stories, if they share their experiences, there are always, wow, mm-hmm. you feel that way on that place in that time. And what does it mean to us, and so on. So there are real need for sharing stories.
Yeah, so this tool, we always say that this tool makes the invisible visible. But besides that, it also creates a space in the therapy room where all voices are heard. So we are also giving voice to every family member, which can be important in some marriages where maybe one of the partner is dominant, or in parent adolescent relationships where adolescents are not heard in their daily routine, and as they can see all the emotional maps one next to the other, like everyone has their voices and they can reflect on each other's experiences, which gives this sense of partnership in family therapy.
Yeah, I can imagine how powerful that would be when you kind of map one person's map on top of the other, and you kind of lay them together and seeing similarities and differences. Actually, what's drawing me in actually is the kind of the selection of the emotional experiences that you chose and how you came about that. What that process might have looked like for you. How you kind of decided that these of security, insecurity, well-being, tension, suffering, togetherness, withdrawal are ones that you kind of you decided upon, and how that works really.
Well, the whole thing comes from research. This basic set of those six emotional experiences comes from the literature of self-regulation and emotional self-regulation, and let's say relationship regulation. So those six experiences serve as a basic set of self-regulation, human self-regulation experiences. But we are also using additional emotional experiences in research and in therapy, which are tailored to either the research question in research or the focus of the therapeutic process in therapy. Mm. So we can also discuss with the family in family therapy if they are interested in adding an experience they would be interested in. And we are also adding our ideas, which are tailored to the specific aim of the therapy.
Mm. And an important theoretical consideration was behind the choice of these emotional experiences, that there should be, so to say, ambivalent place experiences. So not just security, but also insecurity, not just well-being, but also tension, because theoretically, and also, yeah, we have experiences with family space and so on. We know that home should be a very, very secure, a very nice, a very comforting place, it isn't always that. of course, we all have experiences about tensions, insecurity, and so on inside our home and inside our home experiences. So this gives the possibility to the respondents, to family members, to give voice to their ambivalent feelings, to their seldom told stories, and so on. Not just, okay, resources are present in the home, of course, and the positive feelings can show us the resources, but that these ambivalent feelings can show us the vulnerabilities, the weak points, and where therapy can help toward better functioning.
I'm wondering whether I'm hearing sort of, I can hear the information gathering, if you like, and the sharing of stories and the layering from different people in the families or couple from their perspectives. And I don't know if there is a case example or something to speak to, because I'm just wondering what, there's something from hearing it, and then what else sort of comes from it in some ways. It'd be really lovely to hear.
Yeah, we have many stories. Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Viola?
Yeah. If I mentioned adolescence, so one of the first family therapy processes where we introduced the drawing method, so we did not have the toolbox at the time, but we had the drawing method. It was a patchwork family, so a reconstituted family, where we had a mother and her biological son and a stepfather. So it was a family of three. And they were really motivated. The parents were very motivated to have a secure basis for this newly formed patchwork family, but there were also very, very harsh quarrels between the parents, because the mother was more like a spontaneous person, a bit more chaotic, and then the stepfather was much more ordered, and he had an idea about how an ideal family should work. And there was the son. He was 13 at that moment, and he was diagnosed with ADHD, so had also some behavioral problems. And the stepfather was very much involved in the treatment of the child, so he would attend all consultations and so on, and he had very strict ideas about how a CBT treatment would go on at home and so on. And when three of them entered the family therapy room, the boy said that he would not say a word, because it's the parents' business. It does not want to be here, and would not say a word. And we said, okay, we can understand, and it's okay to be silent. We were just thinking about the drawing exercise. So if he would like to draw their own home, that's a possibility. So of course, all of them, so the mother, the stepfather, and the son, were drawing the family floor plan with furnitures and the basic emotional experiences. So they were doing it in silence, in separate sheets of paper. And when we asked them to show those layouts and the emotional experiences on them, what we could see was that the son's layout was filled with suffering. So I can recall the number four was for suffering, and it was full of number fours. And there was only some bits of security, well-being, and so on, on the chair in front of his computer in his room, Whereas for the parents, the living room was filled with positive experiences, suffering for the son too. And the stepfather, on the stepfather's drawing, the number four suffering was put outside the home. So there is no suffering in our home. So when they were confronted with those essential differences in the perception of their common life, it was an emotional moment. It was a kind of cathartic moment. The mother cried a little bit, seeing all the suffering of the son. But then the son started to talk about his experience. So he could not keep silent because it was so very much emotional for him to see all those emotional experiences in. And so he told all those stories, how he experienced just entering the living room. Basically, every afternoon there was a kind of choreography in the family that the parents would ask the child to enter the living room to go through the tick list of the tasks he had if he put the garbage out and so on and so on, and if he was not done with that, then the punishment came. Just banned from using his computer, which was the place of security for the boy, and so on. So it was a very hurting ritual for the son, and the parents had the perception that they were just using bits of the treatment, like the CBT treatment, as they had it in their mind, and they were not aware of the perception of the son. And also what was very, very much emotional, that the son put the experience of togetherness outside of the home. So he was the only child in our practice who would say that there's no experience of togetherness for me in my home. So he in this patchwork family, he not only lost the close relationship with his biological father, but he also lost the close relationship with his biological mother. And the mother was caught between her partner and the son, which could be also observed on the layout as the mother's suffering being located in the corridor between the son's room and the living room, where they had those positive experiences with the partner. So it was one of the first cases where we understood how powerful the emotional map of the home is when we have all those experiences visualized, and then the family members have this visual feedback, which would trigger the stories that are behind those experiences, and those were really untold stories.
I'm sure you've got a question, Cesar, but I just wanted to know, I was just thinking of a young person that I see who really struggles to talk. And the last session we had, it was exact the power actually of just having a piece of paper, of drawing something, and what that does in terms of creating a safe space to talk. And there's something about warming the context in that, in drawing, but also, you know, often in talking therapies, we have something in our head, we try to find words, but there's this step in between in your tool, which that's one of the things I heard is so powerful, actually, in terms of allowing people to talk in the room.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. And it also gives a whole picture about the experiences. It's not only one experience, but a whole set of experiences, yeah. A whole set of his life forming, and the whole space is at the table, so to say, and they can see each other, each other's experiences at one side, so to say. And it's a very good start to share and to find the traces of changes, for example. So one possible point is to find resources for changes. Where are those vulnerabilities that should be somehow healed, and where are the resources to do that? For example, space related rituals can help. Sometimes there are many possibilities to work forward based on these experiences. For example, we can work on finding new rituals between the family members when they have difficulties in meeting at several places of the family home, like they have separate places for well-being and security, and when they meet, they mostly experience tension or conflict or something like that. Then we can start to find new ways of meeting, how do you contact each other? How do you slow down the process? How do you get aware what's happening when you meet the other? What's happening in your body? What signs you give to the others when you try to meet them, and so on? So we can get them conscious to the very details of the process of the communication processes, and try to find new ways of getting in contact.
And then our interventions would be also embedded in their environment. So as we are familiar with the environment, because we have the map, together with the couple or the family, we can find new spots for new types of experiences. So get them out of the spot where they are used to those tense moments and the quarrels and so on, and find new spots where a new kind of encounter is possible.
Yeah. Are you having a lot of fight in front of your child? Yes, we have. And okay, we can discuss the environments and so on. But then we can try to find new places for discussing conflicting things. So where could be, and we can ask them, where is the place of discussing hard, tough topics, for example, in a new way.
In a collaborative way,
okay. But certainly on a new place, new plot. This is all plot for. Not for fighting, but for discussing heavy stuff, for example. So it's a behavioral thing, but also it's connected to this basic place-based self-regulation. Yes. The other part could be, just go on.
No, Thomas, I can really, hearing you both talk, I can really understand the benefits of one, raising the awareness to families around how home can be a secure base to meet people's psychological needs, and to help people. The term I think you used, environmental regulation. But to bring this to people's concepts, to say how this can be done within a home, and finding strategies in what can be a very first order approach, you know, to say if the discussions around, or arguments need to be moved in this. It's a very behavioral change, and sometimes these can have then kind of big impacts. I asked a family that I worked with recently if they don't mind experimenting with this, and maybe I could share it with you, actually, my brief experience of using it. It's a family where loneliness is a big theme, where everybody seems very kind of isolated and they all go to their own rooms. So we done the exercise briefly, not in the way, after hearing you talk, I wish I could just do it again. Yeah. But I done it in the way that we managed to do it in the session. And And the mum had expressed loneliness in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And what it brought up, which was an amazing conversation. It really helped, because I don't think we would have got there in any other way. But the meaning of kitchen for her. So her growing up, the kitchen in her family background was a big place where everybody would come together, and it would be a big point for big conversations would happen there, and it was a real powerful place of togetherness. But for her, with her family, the kitchen was a point of loneliness where people would just come, get their plate of food and go, and she would experience real loneliness there. And the son was shocked. Like, it was something he never thought about. You know, for him, he had a complete different experience. But for them, they physically turned and started just talking to each other. I was just kind of observing at that point. But for them to get to that point, to talk about how they're using that physical space and what it means for them each, and then to find a bit of a solution or a bit of an action plan within that, to say, okay, look, we've got a big table. Why don't we try this? Because now it's no longer just a place where to get food, but it's about other stories and more meaningful stories for them that they can attach to. So I thought I wanted to share that, of how just from that small experience.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Yeah, also thanks for sharing this moment, because the way we use the emotional map of the home is very much linked to our work with transgenerational stories. Yeah. So experiences, childhood experiences and experiences from previous generations always come in when we are exploring emotional experiences at home. So either because in Hungary, many families are living in the same apartment or the same house as the previous generation, or just because of, like in your case, of a specific way of using the specific parts of the home, like the kitchen used for encounters and gatherings and chats and so on in some families. And it doesn't have to be the same kitchen as in their childhood, but it's just the sense of the kitchen for them is like this, and they would miss it in this new way of navigating the space, and in cases where they are using the same space like the father's house or the mother's apartment, it's even more powerful, as we can see, of course, in cases of attachment gaps and wounds and emotional neglect, how those experiences just come back and are there just because of the space being the same or the choreographies being the same. And in the case of an alcoholic father who would withdraw in a specific room, and then the young couple starting their life in the same apartment, even though the father passed away, the wife whose father was this man still could feel this emotional neglect and abandonment whenever her husband would withdraw to that specific room. So it's when we are using the channelogram, we always we are linking it with the emotional home and vice versa. So it's really beneficial to know something about the genogram, then explore the emotional map, and then going back to the genogram to know what would be the choreographies that would reflect the experiences of previous generations, and as we can raise their awareness of those patterns belonging to previous generations, it's easier to let it go, to just differentiate between the emotional burden of the previous generation and their own life here and today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes there are real secrets and surprises in the story of the home that we can trace back with the help of this emote procedure. For example, it's not a transgenerational story, but in a young couple, the one partner who had the apartment where they lived, he had several partners before they were married after a while, so it was a stable relationship, but before he had several relationships, and as we explored the space of their home, it turned out that there was a specific small room with all the memories of his memories about the past women, so to say, which was a secret room and a no-go zone for her. But they didn't mention that. They didn't talk about it, and it was a big tension in her as she lived, tried to live together with this man, but they couldn't integrate into their common life the past experiences. And then, as it turned out, we could help them to share stories and accept each other stories and past experiences, and they find new ways about how they can live together, even if they didn't start their life together as a couple, and they had past experiences and so on. So it was a real turning point when they could share these memories with each other that were. They try to neglect, they tried to abandon these things, and they suffered because they couldn't integrate this part of their life.
Yeah, and speaking about the therapeutic change, so change in the process, it was at that point. So when we realized that tracking change is pretty much difficult with the drawing method, because if you add things, it after a while it becomes very much chaotic with all those experiences changing place and so on. So it was at that point when we started to develop the new tool, which is more like a board game. So we had this the representation of the change in mind when developing this tool. So here we invented like several types of room cards to represent the layout, and it turned out that three sizes of room cards are enough to basically represent every kinds of homes, and also it was my daughter who designed the room cards and also the pieces of furniture that would help clients to visualize the physical environment a little bit more in detail than in the previous drawing method. And then we added the emotional experience markers, which are in four colors. So it's also a link to, you know, our emotions that those different colors
can, like tokens.
Can also, you know, trigger emotions with specific abstract shapes So it's not like, you know, hearts or smileys or so on, but it's more abstract, because it's in this way it's easier to project any kind of emotional experience onto that specific object. And when we first introduced the prototype, we found that it introduces a kind of new playfulness into the therapy session, and even for couples who had been preoccupied with mutual accusations in fightings and so on, even in the therapy room, it somehow just changes the ambience. So as soon as we invite them to play this game, to show their homes through using room cards and furniture markers, in emotion markers, it creates a collaborative, playful ambience, which somehow brings curiosity back to the therapy room, which is important because they somehow, step by step, they become more curious about each other's experiences, like when you are playing the board game, and of course the core piece is the same. So we are asking for stories, we are asking for narratives behind the emotional experiences, and then now we can track change as those experience markers can be replaced, and they can find new arrangements, and as family dynamics or couple relationship dynamics change over the therapeutic process.
That's really important distinction that I didn't think about, actually. So when you're doing it as a drawing exercise, the emotional markers can come across as permanent, static, unchangeable, whereas the game version allows for that movement, and it being playful, but it allows for those emotional markers to be something that can then potentially change, and to to have that in people's mind that this is a fixed object.
And we can also play with these markers during the therapy. What happens, what should happen if you want to experience I don't know, security at that place. Let's put that the marker for security to into the kitchen, for example, like in your example, for the mother. What should happen that she could experience security in the kitchen? Let's do the marker there and reflect on that, and try to find ways for that, or any other ways. To use that, so it's a really
really useful, and who in the family might have an idea of, you know, if it was like togetherness in the kitchen, who else in the family might have ideas of how this might
Another important innovation was that we also introduced pawns to represent family members. So those are colored cubes, and so in your case, for example, you could ask the mother to put her own cube in the kitchen as she's there alone, and put all other family members' cubes to the spots where they are while she's in the kitchen. And then everyone can see how distance is regulated in a family, and how that arrangements, that is, you know, everyone is contributing to that arrangement, that would create that sense of loneliness for the mother. And they can also, of course, represent other arrangements for other family members using all the pawns for the family members. And this way, the EMOT tool is also something that can introduce this systemic way of thinking into individual therapy, because when you are working with just an individual, you can do the same. So you can use the room cards and the furniture markers and emotion markers, and then the poems for the family members, and you will have a view of the whole system and how it's working, how closeness and distance are regulated through the lens of the individual.
Mm. It's amazing. There's so many possibilities I can hear, and I'm thinking about sort of like even like what people's hopes are of what they want to create as well, of what you're saying, and what they would like it to look like and feel like mm-hmm. in the home, and how they can move towards that.
Exactly.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm just reflecting on our the stories and how it could be imagined for those who couldn't see these examples
and the
visual, because we are it's a very visual thing, but yeah, I hope I'm just hoping that we can convey something about its functioning in the reality.
I mean, I think you've really brought it to life. You've definitely brought it to life for me. I feel like I've been able to imagine you know, this process. So thank you. I think you've done a fantastic job.
Thank you for this feedback.
Yeah, no, for sure.
That's relaxing, Pass.
Yeah. A big thing that was really helpful actually when you spoke about it is how the interplay with the genogram, and in a similar way where the genogram could be used as an assessment tool to find out more information about the family and the family dynamics. But then the genogram itself can also be used as a therapeutic tool. And in a similar way, I'm understanding this tool. So there could be an aspect of finding out about the family dynamics and how the family operates or use the home and how the home reflects their relationships. But then also using it beyond that to how changes could be made.
So sometimes I think that the genogram is always somehow the story of homes as well. So of course there are persons, there are relationships, and behind the genogram there are actual homes and home experiences as well, and these experiences are reflected in the present home of the clients, of the individuals. So it's very important part of our work, and of course we don't always use EMOTH in our process. We have specific, so that it's not the strict part of our protocol that would say at the third session we should include the EMOTH. No way. So we have to implement. We have to find the best moment if we implement, or we can leave it out if it's not appropriate. But yeah, in many cases we could find that it can be linked to other techniques, other notions, other therapeutic goals very well.
Yeah, and in terms of assessment and intervention, so we've been asked several times if our tool is an assessment tool or an intervention tool, and what I can say is that. You cannot do assessment with this tool without being aware of you interventing at the same time. So as soon as you are asking for stories, or just the clients to have a look at each other's maps, so the change is happening there. So it's good to know that we are also in an intervention at that point. Where it's purely an assessment tool, it's in our research work. So in research, of course, this is serves as a basis for a semi-structured qualitative interview, and of course we would not intervene anyhow in that process. Just we are just exploring the narrative, so we are giving prompts to explore the narratives of our respondents. So that's, I would say that's assessment. But whenever we are doing it in a therapy room, that's that becomes an intervention, because it's a powerful input for all family members present in the room.
I mean, absolutely. I kind of wonder, you know, in a way, just the fact that you're bringing the home into the therapy room, and then actually they get to take, you know, they're going back to their home. So it's a way to sort of continue so clearly whatever has been spoken about.
As Viola said, that embedding it in their context, their home is such a powerful, taking it out from the clinical setting. And how would changes be made in real life experience for people, you know?
Yeah, as we are inviting their home setting into the clinical setting, it makes them easier to take the lessons learned from the clinical setting to their homes and to implement it in real therapeutic changes.
Really powerful.
And sometimes it can also help them to take home the therapy, as you mentioned, Julie, because through this process, this EMOT procedure, they invite us into their homes. So at the table or at the sheet of paper where they draw the layout, that place is transformed into the real home experience. So we as therapists, we step in into the whole space of the home in this way. And that can help them, this shared experience about their homes. And they inviting us into their home can help them to take home to their real homes, the whole process and the whole experience in the therapy.
Yeah, so and them being the guides for us in their own homes also helps to somehow bring more equilibrium in a power relations in therapy. So we are more like collaborative partners in this case. So they are guiding us in the home, and we are guiding them in the relationship process.
Even if they are vulnerable at home and have difficulties, even so, they are the hosts, and they are empowered they can do that, and they can invite us. Yes.
Can I just check if you're okay for one or two more questions? I know we've done a long time. We'll keep it limited, but thank you so much, it's great so far. I did want to ask, or to give you the space to think about or to talk to us a little bit about some of the theoretical kind of influences on you, on the model, and what kind of informs the approach.
Well, the first one was, of course, from structural family therapy. So this is where the original family floor plan technique comes from. And of course, as we are mapping those experiences, we can clearly see how subsystems are formed, or boundaries between subsystems are formed, and if those are boundaries are flexible enough for the family's needs. So this is one thing. So working with subsystems and boundaries becomes quite easy when you can see the map.
Yeah, and we refer to Bowen's theory. We found that differentiation process, the self-differentiation, and how families manage the level of differentiation and the level of anxiety. These thoughts can trace back, can be traced back to the map of the experiences. Sometimes differentiation and togetherness are clearly represented in on the map and can be, understood, the story behind that, how they manage the closeness, the separation between them, and if they really can feel. That's why, for example, withdrawal, the experience of withdrawal retreat is so important, because it can show if family members can really have their autonomy, they have their own specific life space, or they need, for example, cut off the others to prevent themselves from hurtful experiences. So I think the map can reflect these processes quite well. Mm.
I'm glad you said that, Thomas, because Julie and I had a conversation about the map on the phone, and I don't know if this is appropriate to share, but I feel like I should.
I've got no idea what you're going to say. Trying to remember our conversation now, Cesar.
It's more self-disclosure, Julie.
Okay.
We were talking about solitude and that being on, and I was like, oh God, when I was thinking about my own family, I have a small baby, so we're at that stage, family life cycle stage. And I was like, where is solitude? And I was telling Julie, appropriately or not, apologies, Julie, for that, but the only time I get to myself is I go and sit on the toilet at the moment.
Yes.
And that's the only time I get some thinking space.
Yeah.
It brought something up for me about...
Sometimes the only legal way of finding solitude and home space is going to toilet.
The toilet, or for mothers, the laundry room. The laundry room is an important part of that home.
Where you will hide.
Yeah. And when we generate those stories about specific places at home, we can find that it becomes more easy for the family members to differentiate between thoughts, feelings, and memories. So this is how differentiation happens, like on site in therapy. And I've never seen this before. So this is something that is very much linked to stories about places. So those narratives are very useful for this purpose too. And and the third thing would be the transgenerational theories Bowen's a transgenerational theory, but also Veselményi Nagy, the Hungarian.
I wanted to say it. No. But yes, the contextual therapy of...
The contextual, And of course, when we are working with those stories, we can see hints to loyalties in families, and we can also work with that. So that those we can find some useful hints in the stories behind places, and then we can link those stories to the transgenerational or loyalty stories in the family.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes also this entitlement can be represented in space use, for example, who can step in to places and who cannot, or who is allowed to use spaces or certain or something like this. There are many stories about entitlement and who isn't allowed to do that. So that can have sometimes also this transgenerational richness.
And gender stories around like division of labor, things like that can really get highlighted.
Exactly. That's the gender imbalances are also represented in the home very nice, not nicely, of course, but we can
clearly,
yes.
Clearly. So those are really invisible stories. So invisible labor and in invisible gender stories that are made visible. So as soon as the mother puts half of the positive experiences in the laundry room, then and the stories that are behind her being the laundry room or her having the best conversation with her sister, so like women in the family in the laundry room, and how the living room or other spaces are maybe used by men in the family. So that also gives a family a powerful feedback on how those imbalances are present.
And the other term that stuck out for me from the environmental psychology that you mentioned before was this idea of space ballet. And I don't know if we quite understood that. I don't know if you can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, space ballet is a link to the everyday choreographies that we all have in our homes. So those choreographies are also conscious and unconscious. So of course we know what we are doing, so because we are awake and aware, but those are not conscious because consciously planned choreographies just happening in the same manner every day. And the first day there is a change in this like unconscious choreography, it will create a tension. So, for example, when adolescents are just disconnecting or moving out, or just no, they are still there, but just disconnecting and closing the door of their room. So the first day, a teenager would close the door of the room and say don't come in, that would represent a slight change in the everyday choreography, like the space ballet, like the mother just stepping in the room because the door is open and I as a mother can step in at every moment I want. And this is a space ballet because everyone knows who will be where at what moment. But as family life cycle goes on, new needs are emerging and are just crashing this nicely arranged space ballet or choreography. And then the mother would be like disappointed or just having this sense of loss first being stopped at the door of the teenager.
And these choreographies have the function of just making smooth the everyday functioning smooth, of course, but they have on a deeper level they regulate also the emotional states. So if you can plan with the others' movements in your home. If you can expect where the others will be at certain point moments during the day, then it will give us a kind of security. You can plan with meetings, and you can avoid meetings if you don't want to meet somebody, and so on. So this is all about a common family level and emotional regulation as well.
Lovely. That's
good to have that clear, isn't it?
Really brought to life.
Thank you for taking time to explain that to us. It's really appreciated.
Yeah, it's a nice metaphor that I heard from really Vera, nice. And I liked it very much as well.
Good. I mean, we can go so far with that, right?
Yeah.
The different dances that different family members do. Some might be ballet, some might be rock, mosh pit, I don't know. We always like to end our podcast with thinking about the future, really, and what you might hope for the next steps for yourselves, for this for the EMOF tool, for this way of working? Where can you see it expanding, developing, and also to let people know where they can get more information and buy or purchase the EMOF? So
yeah, please, can you check out the website, because I cannot recall, you know. But
yeah, we can share the links with you, of course,
I will just say a few words about our plans. Now we are first creating a professional network with all colleagues in Hungary, in Europe, and around Europe using this method. And we would like to ask our colleagues who are using the method to share their stories. And we would also like to have a collection of case examples in used in different settings, like in with children or with institutions for children, in family therapy, of course, in couple therapy, in systemic, individual therapies, and so on, to have a collection of cases and to create an edited book that would cover all the possible themes and topics and therapeutic settings where the tool can be applied.
Yeah, because we are also aware that home is a very culturally embedded notion, experience, of course. So we have our culture mindset about home from Hungary, of course, from Central Europe, but at other places of the world, there could be many different experiences. For example, home can include the close neighborhood or other places, not just the physical space inside walls, like here in Hungary. If we think of home, we think of a building and inside the building, the inside of the building. But there are many cultural views about that, and we want to collect these and to share with colleagues together. So not just we share, but they could share their experiences about these topics. And we want to create in the next few years is a computerized version.
Applications.
So to say. We would like to try it. We like very much this board game and its playfulness, but in certain cases, like online therapy, it's hard to use, or it's impossible to use it with clients who are in distance. So probably an online tool could help in these situations, or in research, or something like this.
Yeah, I could see it really fitting well with an online application or a phone application. I didn't want to interrupt there.
Yeah, and those interested in the method can check out our website, which is emot.experimaps.com. So
we'll put that in the description in the blurb, so we can put a link in.
Okay.
I'm wondering about other uses and other, you know, like something used for children in care, and how that could be thought about in that settling period for children in care, and how this stuff can be really thought about in the fabric of that. But I'm also thinking about, from Thomas, your background in architecture, and how architects might take this thinking into their thinking around designing homes that really are more kind of conducive to meeting people's psychological needs. And I wonder if there's that avenue that potentially you could go into.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's my neglect towards architecture that I so far I didn't try to getting into contact with the colleagues from architecture side. Interestingly, there is one project in the Switzerland where a colleague works together, a family therapist works together with a team of architects and social workers around this foster care experience and how can children be supported in these situations. And she told us that we could integrate. So it's interesting for me, like a self-reflection that I have to go to the Switzerland to meet architects and thinking together about these topics. I will get back to this domain as I think, and this has also potential. I think.
Yeah, there are some new perspectives there.
Yeah, and it makes me think, Tomáš, of what you were sharing at the beginning, in a way, how things come back to you in life, yes. You know.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This has been really helpful to have a deep dive into the application, and I hope people really enjoy it as much as we have.
Thank you very much for this invitation. You are wonderful hosts, so I enjoyed very much this discussion with you, and thanks for sharing your experiences too.
Yeah, and really your curiosity and questions helped us to to present and try. I felt this urge to show something that is through the words, to show something that is so visual, and I hope that your curiosity helped in this and helped the listener to grasp the meaning and the core functioning of this method. Thank you.
You brought it to life, absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Brilliant.
And we look forward to the development.
I'm grateful for this possibility.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.